Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Now, coming up on the show, we talked to Alistair MacLeod of goldmoney.com. But first, as always, it's time to hear from Stacy with the hottest headlines of the day.
Max, you know, a lot of people always hope that they could one day predict markets, because if you could predict where markets are going to go, obviously you would be a very wealthy person, right? If you knew the markets were about to crash, you could be super wealthy by shorting it. In that case, if it's going to soar, you would be very wealthy. We saw that with, this vaccine situation that happened in America where they said, this vaccine is going to happen because it's looking good. The trials are looking good. Now the trials are looking bad. But you see the volatility in the stock, and some insiders were dumping, some insiders were buying at the right time. Now, in the one of the largest markets in the world, which is the gold market, and that's trillions and trillions of dollars, you know, something weird happened last week where on Monday morning early, you and I were walking and I said, hey, Max, are gold prices still up over 1750? And you were like, yeah, in fact, they're over 1760. And I said, well, at 8:30 a.m. when New York opens, it's going to crash. And sure enough, it did. So how was I able to predict that? Because that's not right.
Well, this is a common occurrence, isn't it? The morning dump in the futures market. I think I read somewhere that somebody did an algorithmic trading program that just bought and sold this phenomenon of this morning crash in the gold market. And it was annualizing at like 500% or something like that, something remarkable. And for people in the banking industry whose cost of fees are zero and whose transaction costs are zero, that's a lot of money you can make really easily. And it's all communicated back and forth with each other. And it's open price manipulation. For the retail person out there, the cost of borrowing and the cost of transacting kind of makes it unavailable. So this is a nice little perk. If you work in a bank, you get some free cash.
And I know people will say, oh, it's a conspiracy theory, but the fact that I could predict it and knew for certain, I didn't know for certain, but I predicted that this is likely to happen, and it did, was quite spooky. And of course, we're going to go now to Alistair MacLeod of goldmoney.com, because this guy knows gold, but he also knows about shenanigans. And, you know, I don't really ascribe too much grand conspiracy to this, but it does show for sure that if you can predict prices, then something's wrong with that market. Correct, Alistair?
Well, yes. I mean, there are two explanations here. That's one. The other possibility, which we mustn't dismiss, is that actually you're very clever at predicting markets.
Well, in that case, I should be richer than Jeff Bezos. But indeed, I'm not.
That's true. No, I think basically the insiders have a problem. By the insiders, I mean the trading desks of the bullion banks. I mean, there's something like 20 or 30 of them. There's some more market makers as well. They've got themselves very, very short. And unfortunately, they were caught out by the virus, the lockdown, when the Fed turned around and said, we will print whatever it takes to rescue the economy from the virus. And if you were very short of gold at that time, it would have been extremely painful. And that's basically what happened. And they crashed the market in mid-March. They tried to get open interest down. They succeeded in doing that. And they got it down from something just under 800,000 contracts to around about 470,000 contracts. And then, of course, it started recovering. And guess what? The price actually went up over that period, and they didn't manage to resolve anything. And I think they've also got another problem, and that is that bullion banks are effectively the trading desk of a larger bank in most cases. And if you've got a chief executive for the whole bank, looking at the way things have changed, looking at the losses that suddenly seem to have arisen on either mark to myth or on EF, exchange for fiscal trades and so on and so forth. And they say, hold on a minute, do we really need this agro? And not only that, but I want to contract my balance sheet. My balance sheet is too big for the risks that are increasing in terms of lending to the people, my normal customers, lending to into the economy is suddenly a very risky thing. Do I really want to have a big balance sheet? I have got to cut where I can. The Fed is probably turning around and saying that I mustn't cut loans to non-financial businesses. Well, they can't force me not to, but you know, if I'm going to cut, I've got to cut somewhere else. So I'm going to tell my traders to reduce their books, and eventually I just want to get out of it. And that, I think, is the other untold story so far in this, if you like, the COMEX tragedy.
Right, right. Good recap there. Let's move on for a second here. So interest rates went negative in the UK for the first time last week. Your thoughts, Alistair, on what this will do to the UK banking and monetary systems? What do you expect for gold priced in sterling?
Well, I mean, the interest rates are crazy. Basically, the Bank of England is doing QE at the rate of about 50 to 60 billion pounds a month. I mean, this is very big in our economy. It would be sizable in your economy. In our economy, it is absolutely enormous. And so the distortions in the market are just horrendous. The idea that negative interest rates will rescue us somehow or stimulate the economy has been disproved by just looking at what's happening in the Eurozone. Or indeed in Switzerland, or indeed in Japan. It doesn't stimulate anything. If anything, it's a tax on the banks. And I think that the commercial banks, if they are asked by Andrew Bailey what their opinion is, they'd say, don't for goodness sake introduce negative interest rates. We cannot afford to pay a tax, if you like, to lend money to the government. So it is absolutely crazy, Max. It's not going to achieve anything. And I can see no reason why they should be introduced, but we live in a crazy world.
Speaking of stimulus, you know, many academics at the various Federal Reserve banks and central banks around the world, including Ben Bernanke, by the way, they believe that it was World War II which got us out of the Great Depression. They believe that war is a stimulative impact on the economy. So with that, I want to turn to this escalating war of words, at least, between the U.S. and China. The U.S. looks like it's going to apply some sort of sanctions against some senior party officials in China and actually also sanction banks who do any business with those senior political figures in China. So do you expect this to evolve into a hot war as perhaps the U.S. power declines? Is that what's going on? And where do you see it going?
I'm very worried about it, Stacey. I think that this is something very, very serious. We could dismiss it and say it's an election year and Trump is beating the drum to try and get re-elected. But the trouble with this sort of language is that it gets out of control. And the Chinese seem to be very obdurate in their behavior. They seem to have taken the view that since America has decided to cut them off, if you like, from in terms of trade, what they can now do is just carry on regardless. Taiwan is ours. We're going to incorporate Hong Kong. We'll do it in steps. But basically, we've got to put the whole lot together and our communist political objectives are satisfied. I think that is actually very irresponsible behavior by the Chinese. And I would say that it shows absolutely no guile at all. It is just downright stupid. So I am worried about the situation with two parties who are pursuing, you could say, geopolitical ends. I wouldn't give it the respectability of geopolitical ends. I think it's just selfish ends for their own purposes and not actually understanding what the consequences could be.
Right. Alistair, let me ask you a question kind of pertaining to your local market there. You know, it looks like we're heading toward an era of deglobalization, right? And Trump said America first, and China-America relations are fading, and you see countries kind of putting up the barriers all over the world now. And of course, you have Brexit with the UK separating from the EU. Does this impact the City of London? Because the City of London for so many years was the global financial center. It was the perfect time zone to service everybody. They were the place that people went to do their banking, et cetera. Do we see an impact in the City of London? And what kind of ripple effect would this have on the UK, if any?
Well, I think there may be, yes, I mean, the impact on the City of London, I think, is a banking one. That's something which does worry me. I personally believe that there will be a banking crisis within the next month or two at the outside. And the reason I say this is simply because the level of their balance sheets relative to their capitalizations means that banks are incredibly highly geared in terms of the real capital they need to run their businesses. And this at a time when lending risk is just literally going off the charts. I mean, this is a very dangerous situation. So I would say that rather than, you know, the international sort of geopolitical and the sort of contraction of global trade and all the rest of it, to my mind, the more serious threat to London is in the banking system. And it's not just London, it's also the Eurozone. The Eurozone banks are heavily, heavily geared. I mean, just incredibly geared. So that, I think, is where the danger is. I think we're going to get a banking crisis within the next month or two, and markets are completely unaware of it.
Of course, the U.S. Federal Reserve seems to be aware of it because they started buying a lot of bonds off these banks, including junk bonds. They're also buying ETFs, which has caused the interest rates on junk bonds to fall by 4% in the past week since the Fed started buying. So, I mean, can the US Fed come to the rescue of all these bad debts across the global financial system?
Well, that undoubtedly, as you point out, is the motivation for the Fed doing this, because they want to keep these risk yields, if you like, the risk element in yields compressed as much as possible. But they can't do it for the whole world. They can do it for dollar supply chains to a degree. I mean, certainly in America, that's what they're going to attempt to do. They've had currency swap arrangements put into place with a range of banks beyond the original six, which is really designed at protecting supply chains which are outside America but feeding into America. But the amounts involved in that are potentially enormous. You're looking at the gross output figure, which is roughly twice the GDP figure in the United States. And that's just for the onshore element. Now, not all the supply chains are messed up, but a very significant portion of them are. And of course, you've then got all the stuff that's abroad, which could be another, I don't know, 20 trillion or something like that. But the problem in Europe is that the gearing in the banks, as I say, is huge. I mean, I was looking at some figures which I put into an article, and SocGen, the big French bank, has a market capitalization of 10 billion euros. The assets on the balance sheet are 1.356 trillion euros. Now, that gives a ratio of market capital to assets of 0.7%, or if you turn it up the other way, 136 times. The assets are 136 times the market capitalization. Now, the market capitalization of all these banks is considerably less than book value. So price to book is always a fraction. But this is telling us something which we should worry about. These banks are not fit to trade. And in the very high level, I would include SocGen, Deutsche Bank, Barclays, Paribas, UniCredit, Standard Chartered, Santander, and Credit Suisse. Now, on top of that, we've got HSBC, which, of course, has a lot of exposure to China and Hong Kong, and UBS. Now, these are globally, systemically important banks, the G-SIBs. These are not the small ones. I mean, if you look at something like Commerzbank, it's actually similar in ranking on this basis to a bank like Deutsche Bank. There are loads of banks in Europe which are so incredibly geared on their market capitalizations that an accident is certain to happen when you find that these risk spreads are blowing out and non-performing loans are bound to blow out. So you can see that the situation is immensely dangerous over here. The capitalization of the banks in America is better, as always, if you can believe the figures, which I always take with a pinch of salt. But it does seem to me that we've got big problems over here, and you've got to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, well, certainly the UK banks are not looking great, as all these properties like commercial properties and commercial mortgage-backed securities are blowing up. They get a lot of exposure there in the UK with COVID-19. Is that going to be the property market? We don't have much time, but is the property market blowing up in the UK going to impact these banks' balance sheets, Alistair?
It's bound to be a problem for the very simple reason that money is going to be withdrawn from mortgages and also lending to commercial property. I think those property prices are headed lower.
Very good. Okay. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. I'd like to thank our guest, Alistair MacLeod of GoldMoney.com. Until next week, bye, y'all.